we're going to come back to the beginning of the parasha. The beginning of the parasha is a discussion about Shemitah that I'd actually like to come back to. But just look at the first pasuk. The first pasuk says, "Vaydaber Hashem al Moshe Bahar Sinai Lemor." And Rashi famously tells us. Now, the Torah is then going to tell us the laws of Shemitah. So Rashi says in the first column there. So Rashi says, "Ma inyan Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai." What in the world does this have to do with Shemitah and Har Sinai? Or in English, how do you translate "Ma inyan Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai"? Right. What's the famous phrase? What's that do with anything?
The price of tea in China.
Very good. What's the price of tea in China? In fact, in Israel. In Israel, that is how in the old days, in subtitles of TV shows, when they would say, "What does this have to do with the price of tea in China?" they would Hebrew subtitle it, "Ma inyan Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai." Okay? So Rashi says, so listen to Rashi. Rashi says, "V'halo kol ha-mitzos never," everything was said at Har Sinai. So Rashi says, "Elamash Shemitah Nemru Klosea Upratosea Vidukdea Misinai." Just like Shemitah was said at Har Sinai with all of its details. Afkan, Afkula Nemru, all the mitzvahs were said at Har Sinai. Okay. So what's still the question?
Why Shemitah?
Why Shemitah? Could work for anything. Why keep it up? Aim was said at Har Sinai, so everything was said at Har Sinai. So I'll share with you two answers. One answer is there was no mitzvah more foreign to the Jewish people when leaving Egypt than the mitzvah of Shemitah. You mean to tell me, as a slave for 210 years, without property, without money, without anything, that at some point, I'm going to be in Israel, I'm going to have a homeland, and I'm going to have a land, and it's going to be so great, and then I'm going to take a year off? Like, that is so foreign to me. So just like Shemitah seems so foreign to you, yet is relevant, all the mitzvahs have that relevancy. That's one opinion. Happens to me yesterday, I had daven an early mincha, so... Well, I was at a mincha that takes a little longer than regular minchas, so I pulled out a sefer, which I probably should not have during Chazaras HaShatz, and I saw an amazing answer. The sefer called the Mein Besa Shoeva from Rav Schwab. Schwab was the great Rav of the Breuer community. So Rav Schwab's beautiful idea. Rav Schwab says there are people that claim over the course of history that not all the mitzvahs were said by God. Right, that some mitzvahs were really said by man, or Chazal made them up, or added them, but they weren't from Hashem himself. Why Shemitah is this chosen? To show all the mitzvahs were said at Har Sinai. Because even if you believe that the rabbis were to make up all the mitzvahs, there's no way they would make up something as ludicrous as Shemitah. You mean to tell me that I'm going to take a year, and even if you believe that the land needs to lay for a year and not work, you're going to tell me that everybody should do it at the same time? You should stagger it. You took 1 year, I'll take year two. So just like Shemitah, that is so absurd to think about it in the normal realm. It was said at Har Sinai, all the mitzvahs are said by HaKadosh Baruch Hu at Har Sinai. Okay. So we're going to skip Shemitah. Well, I want to come back to Shemitah in a minute. The bottom of the page, you have the idea that you're going to count seven cycles of Shemitah. Shemitah in rabbinic literature and in Jewish history has extreme relevance. Jews didn't keep Shemitah. The reason the Jews had exile. It has a very, very deep importance to it. And at the end of that seventh cycle, what do you have? You have Yovel. Hey, okay? The Torah says on page 698, you'll make holy the 50th year, Ukrasem Dror, and you will proclaim freedom. It will be a year of Yovel. What happens in that year of Yovel? What do? Everything goes back. All the properties go back. Now, until Hillel came along and made a document called the Prusbol. If you were to make a series on, you know, I have like a file of like things that I keep adding to the series that at some point we'll do it, but like courageous decisions, okay? Like earth-shattering decisions by great leaders. You would have Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi deciding to write down Torah Shabbat Peh when the Torah clearly says you can't. You would have Hillel, who the Torah says, Yovel he, you have to, the land, no matter what, all real estate goes back to its owners. So what was happening? So people either weren't lending, or you're trying to get, lend me this for, you know, it's a loophole. So Hillel decided to make something called a Prusbol. What's a Prusbol? You sign it and it gets you around this issue. That's crazy. If somebody were to think of that today, we would attack him. Oh, it's a Haredi, or he's modern. He's so modern. He's so left. He's trying to loophole. That was Hillel's idea. It was to ensure that Jews would still lend to each other, that Jews would still provide for each other. It's amazing, amazing. So the Torah says everything goes back in the 50th year, and everything goes free. Now, what happens if you look in the? I didn't quote it for you. I didn't quote it. Where's my Chumalibu? Sorry. I don't know why it's here. Go to page 4. I put it in the wrong place. Go to page 4. Says the Chama Leibowitz, Bishnasa HaShemitah Chozer HaOlam. Oh, this is about Shemitah. Yeah, during the year of Shemitah, so everything goes back. L'matzav, now she's really talking here about Yovah Shahaya and Briyas HaOlam, like all the way back to the beginning. HaAdam Rishon Yatzir Kapav Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu Terem Terem, before even there was Chet. That, she says, that is Yovel. Yovel is, in the purest sense, things are returning. You get a fresh start. Which is why, what do we do? How did we announce Yovel when it was a Yovel year? When did we blow the shofar? Not Rosh Hashanah. Yeah, the Motzi Yom Kippur. The Tkiah Shofar that we have, that's how they announce Yovel. That we still have it because it speaks to the same idea. This idea of returning and a fresh start, which is what Yovel was for a Jewish nation, is what it was for us after we leave as we leave Yom Kippur. Okay, let's continue. That's Yovel. That's the end of the seventh cycle of Shemitah. So the Torah continues and talks here about making sure that we provide for others. Parsha Behar is not a very very long parsha. If you look, for example, page 702, you have the idea of giving here, another idea of giving tzedakah. If your brother is poor, you have to make sure that you provide for him, and they have to live with you. That ger has to make sure that you have a place. Why do we have so many commandments for a ger? Yeah, but why? Why are we commanded more than to love each other and to love a ger? So the simple answer is, you have it here, you have it in Parshas Ekev, you have it in other parshios. Why do we have a commandment to love the ger? The simple answer is that a ger always feels lonely. They feel lonely. They're gonna now, they have to become part of a community, and who's gonna welcome them? And they feel awkward saying Asher Kedishanim, and some of it's even though they learned it and they're fully Jewish. You know, like somebody asked me recently, they asked me what happens if somebody converts and then they stop. Okay, they stop practicing. So what happens? I said, it doesn't make a difference. Now we have another Jew who's not practicing. Right? So a ger feels lonely. But Rav Huttner shares the following idea. Rav Huttner says that you love a ger because you need to surround yourself with people like gerim. Because gerim clearly went out of their comfort zone. They did something that was so wild and extreme in their relationship with God. They gave everything up. They had to only keep 7 mitzvos. Now they keep 613. And because that they went, that we should love them, so we learn from them and we're inspired by them. Often we feel, embarrassed sometimes around Gerim. Here's somebody who last year wasn't even Jewish, and now he's davening more with a minyan than I am. And he's learning more Torah than I am. So we love the ger. It's because we sometimes want to shy away from the ger. If you want to see a great, if you go online, it's called the I think it's called like the funniest kirov speech. It's by Hilly Davis. He's to work for the beginners minyan in Lincoln Square Synagogue. So he has, it's about an 8-minute speech. It's from 30 years ago or something. This 8-minute speech is unbelievable. And in this speech, he talks about every Friday night, the beginners, they want to come to his house for a minyan, for a meal. And, you know, and they get to the house and he says, all I want to do is go to sleep. And they want to sing Shalom Aleichem 3 times, right? And then they want to know, why are we covering the challah and all these things. And he makes fun of them in a sense. And then he says at the end, obviously, that you embarrass us. You know, you're so inquisitive and curious, and, you know, Shavuos, we're talking about Emunah, we're talking about a relationship with God and what that means in the world, what that means in nature, all these different things. So Gerim understand that, and that's why you have to love the Ger, so you bring him into your home. Okay. The Torah then continues basically the rest of the parasha about different rules of slavery, about more about Yovel. So let's go back to the beginning. I want to actually take a little bit of time this morning and discuss Shemitah, and especially Shemitah in the relevance to Shabbos. So let's look at the Pesukim. Says the Torah. So the second Pesuk says, Daber b'nei Yisrael v'amar toa aleihem, ki savo el ha'aretz. When you come to the land, asher ani nosein lachem, v'shavis ha'aretz. What that word is the word of Shabbos. What does Shabbos mean? Now, Shabbos doesn't really mean rest. Here it translates rest. Shabbos means cessation. It actually means, according to the Sforno, to stop doing X and to do something else. Right? Shabbos isn't just a day of rest, it's a day to do something else. Okay, but I have to rest the land. Shabbos laHashem. Sheishonim tizra sodecha v'sheishonim tizmar karmecha. 6 years, you'll work it, you'll sow it, you'll do everything you need for the land. V'yosafto ha'sevu asot. And you'll gather it. Uvashanah shviyis in the 7th year, Shabbos, Shabboson yelaretz. The land is going to rest. Shabbos laHashem, sadcha lo sizra v'charmecha lo sizmar. You can't do anything. And it continues, you can't, Shabboson. Similarly, the Pasuk says in Pasuk Vav, I saw Shabbos ha'aretz lochem lo'achlo lo'chol le'avdochol. Everybody's got to rest. And the question is, why? What a crazy idea that every 6 years we're going to have to stop. And we're not even going to get into it today. A little bit we'll talk about the Heter Mechira and its relevance. But you have to understand, it's a wild idea that every 6 years we're going to stop what we're doing and we're just going to be like, yeah, you know what? God's going to take care of it. You know, well, we're going to talk on Shavuos, the balance between the faith that I have in God and the human initiative. Where is the balance between those two? You know, should I even go to work? If God wants to give me money, He'll provide me money. Now, on the one hand, that's crazy. On the other hand, how much should I work? How much should I work? You know, if I could make a certain amount of money, is God going to make me make? What's the balance? So here, we're just going to take off a year and we're going to hope that God takes care of us. So look at the Rambam. Says the Rambam in source number 2. As the precepts enumerated in the laws concerning the year of Shemitah, some of them imply sympathy for our fellow man and promote well-being for mankind. For these precepts, it is stated in the Torah. And besides, says the Rambam, the last line, this is a little bit of an extreme opinion of the Rambam, the land will also increase its produce and improve when it remains fallow for some time. Meaning, we're going to talk a lot that the mitzvah of Shemitah has to do with belief in Hashem, companionship, caring for others. So the Rambam says, no, agriculturally, the land needs a year off. It needs to rest so that in year 8, it can really grow. Okay, so let's look at the Sefer HaChinuch for a second. Says the Sefer HaChinuch, he gives 3 reasons as to why we have this mitzvah. The Sefer HaChinuch always gives what he calls the Misharsher HaMitzvah, the root of the mitzvah. Look at number 1. At the root of this mitzvah lies the purpose to establish in our heart and set in our thought a firm conception of the doctrine the world was brought into being as a new entity, out of nothing, for in 6 days, it's not a coincidence, 6 days of Shabbos, it's 6 years, and then you leave it, you let it rest. 7th day, Hashem created nothing, and He Himself is described as resting. To remove and uproot from our thinking any concept of the world's timeless preexistence, in which those who deny the Torah believe, thereby demolishing its every basis. So we have Shemitah. The first thing is, Shemitah reminds me, God's in control. No matter what I think, and no matter how much I'm going to work, I need a year off to remind me, I'm really not in control. And as we move and we move faster and faster, and we get more, that's, we're going to talk in a second, that's the goal of Shabbos. Okay, what do we do Friday night? We make Kiddush. What's the main goal of Shabbos? Rest. It's not rest.
Learning.
The main goal of Shabbos is learning. That's Shabbos, is to cease from doing work. But the main goal of Shabbos is to remind myself that I am not in charge. All of the lamites melachos that we have, there's 39 things you can't do on Shabbos. You can't cook, you can't separate certain things, you can't tochein, merah, all of these different things. Why? Because all of those things are constructive acts. That's how they built the Mishkan. They built the Mishkan and they created dyes and bread and all of these things. So on Shabbos, it's not, people always think these things are muktzah. Right? Can't cook on Shabbos, it's muktzah. It's not muktzah. Right? Muktzah is a derabbanan. It's bad. I'm not recommending it. And muktzah also, the goal of muktzah is to remind me that Shabbos is different. But the lamedes melachos are there because they were constructive, positive things. And I have to remind myself, and as advanced as we get in the world, and I could do all these crazy things now with technology out there, and I could send a man to the moon, and we could cure illnesses. At the end of the day, we're not in control. And if we kept working, we're not going to realize that. So that's number one. And that's what we do also on Shabbos. Number two, it says Sefer HaChinuch. Another useful benefit to be gained from it, to attain through the quality of yielding and relinquishing. There is no one so generous as a person who gives with no hope of receiving anything in return. What happens that year of Shemitah? Whose field is it? Anybody's. It's not even my checkbook. It's not that you come to my house and the Mishalachim line up and I say, I'm giving you X and you X. It's done. And it inculcates inside of Jews an ability to have to learn to give. If you want a great book on this process, it's called Give and Take. Give and Take is a great book by Adam Grant, well-published author, and he talks about what?
And teacher at Wharton.
Yeah, he's amazing. You took him or did you? He's unbelievable. So he in this book, it's his major thesis that the more that we give, then companies that give and have a culture of giving, those are the ones that are more successful. The more that I'm able to give, doesn't mean to give everything. Halakha says you can't give more than, you can't give all of your money away. Why? Because then you're going to be poor. But it's not, giving is not a monetary number. It's not, I gave this amount. Stuck is a culture. It's a way of life. So the more that I learn to give, the better I become. So what greater way for me to learn how to give than to give up my entire field? If I was told to learn how to give, I would give. And we do. We give tzedakah during the year. But every 7 years, we take a break, and we do it on an extreme scale. And the final piece, as the Sefer HaChinuch, is another useful benefit to be, is that a man increases trust in the Eternal Lord. For any man who is hard to give and leave free ownerless for all the world, all the produce grown by his lands, becomes trained in this all his life, neither the quality of miserliness nor the lessening of divine trust. That's another thing we're talking about over Shavuos. The trust that I have in God, not an easy thing. This balance of bitocho and trust and faith and emuna doesn't mean believe. Emuna means faith. And that's what they have to learn here. So that's the Sefer HaChinuch. So let's turn the page. So fine. Now we understand the Sefer HaChinuch. What were they supposed to do during this year? So, okay. Imagine, by the way, if you were told that you had a year off. Okay, if you had a year off, I don't know what I would do with it, but what did the Jews do with the year off? They were supposed to learn. I mean, they had nothing else to do. There was no Netflix, right? Like, if you gave a high schooler today a day off with no Netflix, they wouldn't know what to do, right? So, not every high schooler, just most. Or adults. So listen to what... So, it says Rabbi Alex has a wonderful piece, but I'll just share with you the go to the second paragraph. The Shemitah year is a power to adjust. The year both the rich and the poor go out to collect grain together. That's a fascinating idea. Yesterday, the poor farmhand was a simple employee in the field. Today, he has full permission to enter the field and take the food himself. Today, the poor can enter with their heads high. As for the rich, this year presents them a certain feeling of insecurity that they never faced. Now, this is not communism. This is not supposed to be, and we don't believe this, because during the other 6 years, it doesn't work like this. But if you keep going in life, the point of Shemitah is you have to stop. If you don't stop once in a while, you keep going and going and nurturing the same habits that aren't always the most beneficial and impactful and positive. You know, so you have to sometimes stop. In fact, I didn't even quote here. Oh, I did quote it. We'll see it in a second. But what happens here is that the poor learns... gains more trust in himself. One of the most important things you can do for somebody who needs tzedakah is not just to give them tzedakah. It's good, but a goal to giving tzedakah should be to help them. The greatest form of giving tzedakah is a job. Why is it a job? So number one is what Lisa is saying, is that they should be able to. There's organizations today that do that. You know, I had a meeting with one of the organizations recently where they were. They're amazing, but I told them, I said, they were trying to tell me that every other organization isn't as good. I said, listen, no matter what, some people just need help. Okay, some people need help, but yes, to train them that they can now get out of there on their own and they can have a full life. There's some great organizations that do that today. Laman Achai is a great organization that now helps people get out of that. But they should have their heads held high. The poor person, the rich person, has to also have some insecurity. Why? Because at the end of the day, it's not yours. And as much as we might say it, during the year of Shemitah, people learned that lesson. And it continues. The next paragraph goes further. How many times you meet a person and ask, what do you do? And telling them to ask about their work, their career. We all ask that question. We define our friends and acquaintances by their job, by their career, but there's so much more. The Shemitah year, the first year, and the employee and employee rich and the poor meet as equals. They see each other. In the Shemitah year, the simple clerk and the chairman of the bank will meet in the orchard as they both collect their food and talk to each other for the first time in their lives. It's a year of equality which combined an entire society. So you need a year sometime, and not a day. You need a year to realize these things. Okay. Now, it happens to be that is not just there is a goal in terms of our relationship with God, the trust in God, and the ability to see each other as equals. The truth is, it's the same goal on Shabbos. Every week, it's not ironic. Oh my gosh, the Torah's word for Shabbos is the same word that's here. Look at that. The same idea that the Jews did during Shemitah, that we all can relate to, and it makes sense, is the same thing that happens every Shabbos. And let me just share, look at the top of page 3. Rabbi Rimon shares in his Sefer on Shemitah a number of these parallels between Shabbos and between Shemitah. The most obvious include the seventh day, the seventh year, resting. But he continues, and he shows all of these textual examples that are in the Psukim. Why is that? Because all of the same goals we have in Shemitah, trust in Hashem, relationship with God. So during the year, what did those Jews do when they come up? They learned. They went to the Kollel. They went to the Beis Medrash. They opened the Gemara. They opened the Chumash. They had time. During the 6 years, God understands. People are working. Now what that level is and all that time that you allocate, that's something that a person has to figure out for themselves. A person can't just say, I need to work 20 hours. It's the most important thing and I'll learn at some point. But every Shemitah year, no matter how much you worked, you stopped, and you got a chance, so you went to the kollel shir, then you went to this kollel, then there was another kollel. Everybody had a kollel that year. There's a lot of kollel dinners the year of Shemitah, right? They had no food, but there was a lot of kollel dinners, right? So you learn, the same is true for Shabbos. The same is true for Shabbos. So during the week, it's impossible. I don't have all the time. I don't have the time to sit and learn. Yeah, I go to a shir, and of course, we learn Torah during the week, but it's different. Shabbos is a whole different element. You know, Rabbi Rimon, when we called him like 2 years ago in class I mean, Danny's here. We called him, and we, over the year, we keep like Shiles, and we learn Hilchos Shabbos in eighth grade, me and Mrs. Rosenbaum. So we keep like Shiles, and then sometimes we, at the end of the year, we'll like call a posek to answer them. So we called Rabbi Rimon. We set up, Rabbi Rimon is tremendous. If you don't know Rabbi Rimon is the, if you think you're busy, you've never met Rabbi Rimon. Rabbi Rimon, besides teaching in the Gush, and he has an educational institution, and he provides curriculum for schools in Israel and in America, his curriculums, his workbooks, which you can buy on your own, are absolutely phenomenal. His way of thinking, his Haggadah, his way of thinking is in a different level. It's extremely clear, thought out. And on top of that, after the disengagement from Gush Katif in 2005, everybody was trying to do whatever they could. Rabbi Rimon left the Gush for a little bit to start something called Jab Katif. For Jab Katif? So Jab Katif was to take the residents of those that were you know, kicked out of their homes and to restart them with those jobs. So you want a market, I'm going to raise money for you to start the supermarket. You were an account, I'm going to find you, not here's money, to give them jobs, to start them on their feet. And it's still, I mean, I think he's still working on it, but years later, it has repercussions. They're positive, and they have jobs. That's Rabbi Rimon. So that's all this stuff about Shemitah. And yeah.
Nowadays in Israel, the Jews relocate Shemitah.
Okay, hold on a second.
Wait, buy from the Arabs.
Hold on, we're going to talk. Hold on a second. Hold on a second to that. The same is true for Shabbos. Look at Rav Kook at the bottom. The Ibn Ezra in Surah 6 says that they should learn. That's what they should do. Says Rav Kook, the same mechanism that Shabbos performs for the individual on a weekly basis is put into effect for the entire nation in Shemitah. This nation in which the divine spirit of creativity is planted prominently eternally has a special need of expressing the revelation of its own divine light. Okay, look at the underline. That aggressiveness which is essential to the workings of institutions and public arena, causing a diminishing of moral sensitivities. There is this tension and conflict between the call to care, kindness, and truth, pity and compassion, and also ruthlessness, coercion, meaning we live in this like very, very, very conflicted life. Turn the page, and he continues that one of the things that Shabbos does, two things, is what Rabbi Israel said earlier, it brings back this societal order. Everybody's sort of on the same path. Skip source 8 and go to source 10. Says Rav Kook, life can, this it should be a bumper sticker on everybody's car and refrigerator. Says Rav Kook, life can only be perfected through the affording of a breathing space from the bustle of everyday life. And if Rav Kook wrote in this pamphlet about Shemitah in the early 1900s, what would Rav Kook say if he plopped down into 2019? If he saw how fast the world is moving and how busy people are. And it's not to say that we should just, I'm not going to do any of these things. I'm just going to live like it was in the 8th. No, this is the way the world is. It just means that Shabbos, our Shabbos, takes on an extreme role in 2019. In Tavshanai and Tes, Shabbos is 1,000 times more important, perhaps, than it's been at any time in Jewish history. Because we don't have the time, and we have so much less time. But what's happening is that because we're so tired and exhausted and wiped out, Shabbos is, I can rest, which it should be. But because we're so busy, we don't necessarily have that time to, you know, I remember one Friday night a few years ago, we had Chai Lifeline was here for a Shabbos. So they asked me if they could do like a more festive Kabbalah Shabbos. So I told them yes. I said, listen, don't overdo it only because, you know, people don't want to be over, but for sure you could sing. And the second that chazan got up there and went lechu niranina, like oh my gosh, people's eyes are rolling. A guy walked over to me and said, I didn't know this was going to happen. I would have gone somewhere. Would have gone somewhere else. It's 4:10. It's Friday in December. Where are you going? Right? Where are you going? So, and still to this day, I'll tell him in advance. I'll say, you know, listen, if you don't want to worry about your spirituality, don't come this Shabbos. But it's true on Shabbos morning. Shabbos morning a little bit extra, but it's in general, you know, the time we spend on Shabbos, what we do on Shabbos, that's all part of the malachos of Shabbos are geared towards creating a sanctity that we have to then fill in with something. That's the goal of the malachos. You know, that's the goal of muktzah. The goal of muktzah. So I asked Rabbi Rimon. So we asked him we had all these halachic shalas. So we asked him a question. We asked Rabbi Rimon something about muktzah, whatever it was. So Rabbi Rimon says to the kids, he goes, you know Disney World? The kid says, we know Disney World. He says, you ever been to Disney World? We've been to Disney World. You know, Disney World, it's a world of its own. I go, yeah. He goes, Rabbi Rimon says, even the bathrooms are different in Disney World. So the kid's like, yeah, we know. He says, that's Shabbos. Shabbos is a Disney World. I'm like, I've been teaching Hilchos Shabbos for like 8 years. And like in one sentence, he like captured, but that's what it is. And we have to realize that the laws of Shabbos are there to help us gain that experience. The idea of all the, I can't cut, I can't this, I can't that, is because we have to realize we're not in control. The idea of muktzah is that our Shabbos shouldn't look the same. All these new things are trying to be introduced. There's, a few years ago, there was the Shabbos app that was being rolled out. Maybe you can use your phone because it's like a grumma and it's a buy this and it's not really, it's possible. And now there's a light thing that you can, it's possible. When you walk through a house Friday night in any neighborhood, you know who Shomer Shabbos because all of their lights are on, right? At 11 o'clock at night. But Shabbos has to have a different feel, and we have to fill it in with all of these, with all of this, you know, the extra parts. Rabbi Linzer told me a story in Ramaz. He had a student, and the student was going to Italy for a summer internship program, and it wasn't a Jewish experience. And so whatever, so there was their 4 Shabbos, and they were going to be there. So the first Shabbos, all the people are going out Friday night, whatever, they're going to go do whatever they want to go do. And this girl said, I'm going to stay in my room. And like, so of course the lights were all left on and nothing she could do. And she says, by the time she got home, she told Rabbi Linzer, I didn't realize how much the halachos help play a part. It's not just the singing and the zmiros. The halachos help keep Rabbi Appel in the beginning of the concise code talks about that the laws of Shabbos are used to construct the atmosphere of Shabbos, and we have to know Hilchos Shabbos because if we just went about Shabbos, if we came to Shul and we did everything like normal, but we went home to have a nice meal, but we didn't have all those halachos, it wouldn't be Shabbos. So Rabbi Rimon told the kids at the end the following story. He says that in his shul, in the Gush, Rimon lives in Alon Shvut, in a shul in the Gush, there's a person that works for Google. And this person that works for Google, their job in his shul, what they do for Google, is they can help you get to like either page one of a search or page 25. And sometimes companies, if they're getting attacked by some, maybe they want to be on page 25. So what happens to be one after one Shabbos, this guy gets home and he has a phone call and an email and a text and a house phone call. And somebody called him and says, "Where were you? My company got this attack. We lost $500,000 today and we needed your help." And he says, "It was my Sabbath. I couldn't pick up the phone." He said, "I know, that's why we emailed you." And he says, No. I can't pick up my email. I know, that's why we called your house phone." So he explains, "No, it's the Sabbath." So she says, "Hold on a second." She runs, she comes back, she goes, "I'm listening." She says, "I have a paper and a pen." She says, "Every week we go to church. Every week we try after church to come home and have a family meal. And within 5 minutes, this one's on this one's on that device, this one's watching football, and we can't get through 5 minutes. What do you do? What's the recipe?" And the laws of Shabbos helped us get to that point, and that was Shemitah. Shemitah was the year, was the every seventh year reminder about these goals. So he asked me about Israel. This is not the time to talk about the Heter Mechira and the debates. I'll share with you the following. And I shared a little bit here from Rav Lichtenstein, but this is the following idea. The idea of a Heter Mechira was introduced in what's called, they had to do it, right? There was no option. Yeah, there were some communities that didn't hold of it in the late 1800s, early 1900s. The Heter Mechira essentially says, if we sell our land to the Arabs, it's on our land, and then we can continue to work the land. Okay, so Rev Cook signs off on it, and others, or Shmuel Maliver and others, because they felt that if we don't have this Heter Mechira, what's going to happen? People aren't just going to die. We're going to lose the land. We're going to lose the land of Israel. So there is still that debate today. Should it be relied on? Should it not be relied on? What's the state of Israel today? Could they get around it? Not get around it? But it's important to remember that Heter Mechira was never something that was ideal. Even Rav Kook says it's not. This is not the ideal state. Rabbi Soloveitchik used to tell people, if you are visiting Israel during Shemitah, you're visiting your kid in yeshiva or seminary, you're going for sukkahs, you should not be relying on Heter Mechira. Because you're not there. You're not the farmer. You're not real. You don't need to rely on it. It's completely out there. But listen to what Rav Lichtenstein says. I want to share with you the following idea. Says Rav Lichtenstein, the bottom of page 4. "As is the case, whenever the seventh year rolls around, people are preoccupied with the subject of Shemitah. Books are published in articles," and he says, this was in 5733. It's not that, it's not last year, but constantly what he says, a halachic tragedy. Why? Obviously, it's first and foremost a body of halacha covering several areas. But the halachic rules regarding Shemitah reflect a multitude of values to serve to inculcate in the body of the politic of Klal Yisrael. And he writes, as with the weekly Shabbos in the bowl, if you turn to the next page, "The Shabbos of the land instills an awareness of God's absolute and exclusive ownership of the land and authority. On the other hand, it liberates farmers from the drudge of everyday chores to give them time for contemplation of eternal issues. It clips man's wings and it yet enables him to fly." And he says in the next paragraph, "What remains for us today of this enchanting vision is nothing but a hollow shell." Meaning, either I'm relying on Heter Mechira, or I'm paying exorbitant amounts of money. And he says, the idea of Heter Mechira is for the chief rabbi, and he's not getting involved in the discussion. But when we hear Shemitah today, you know what we say? Ay. That's what we say. And he says, and there's reasons for it, and it's hard, and it was difficult. There are periods in Jewish history where they mamish didn't have food. They didn't have food, and it's not saying that it was an easy Shemitah year. But the goals of Shemitah are forgotten about, either because we're not holding of Shemitah, or because by holding of Shemitah, we're annoyed that it's so expensive, and it's so this, and it's so that. But what shouldn't be forgotten about is that the beauty of what Shemitah taught us. And that's why, if you look at the last verse I share with you here, the Mishnah tells us in Pirkei Avos that Golos Bo Li Olam, that exile comes for four things. Avodah Zarah, really bad. Gilui Arayos, really bad. Adultery, not recommended. Shvichas Dam and murder, also not recommended. And if I were to ask you, pick a fourth one, nobody in their right mind would have ever said Shemitah. Says the Mishnah, V'hal Shemata Asa Aretz. How could that be? So Rabbeinu Bachya says that there are three reasons why we tend to forget about about God. Either about God's role in is that necessarily in our lives. Either it's because we have stuff already, we take it for granted. Right? We take for granted the ability to get up, the ability. And not to say that a person shouldn't acknowledge problems and issues that he has. But we sometimes, we yawn at the capacity that we got up this morning and we drove here and we were able to learn Torah. That we like, you know, it's the fact that I was able to get on an airplane and fly to like halfway across the world and not die in a massive sheet of box of metal, like, it's unbelievable. The fact that Israel almost landed on the moon, like, all right, they didn't land on the moon. Come on, right? That's number one. The second, he says that we have pain in our lives, that the issues that we have overwhelm us, and it takes away from seeing what God has given to us. And the third, he says, is that no matter how much we have, someone's always got more, spiritually and physically. Someone has a better community, a better family, a better school, a better car, a better house, a better vacation, a better this and a better that. And because of those three things, as Rabbeinu Bachya, we forget about the role that God plays in controlling the world, giving it to us what we need. And that's why he says that's the goal of Shemitah. Shmatas Haaretz here fits in because it's all about the role of God in my life. And you know, it's really going to be a major, major theme of Shavuos this year, this idea of the role of God in my life, nationally, you know, communally, individually. But that's the goal of Shemitah, and that really ultimately is the goal of Shabbos. That the goal of Shabbos is to see God in my life, to appreciate that I'm not in control, and in that appreciation, it's supposed to actually be calming, that I can't control everything, we're going to talk about over Shavuos. But that Shabbos is a time to realize that I'm not in control, to realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in control, and to use the time that I have for Shabbos to reconnect in the ways that I wasn't able to connect during the week, to, as Rav Kook says, to provide, you know, I skipped over life. You go back to Rav Kook just for a second, to that source number 10 in the bowl. I showed you the first line, but listen to what he says. Page 4, source number 10. The periodical suspension of the normal social routine raises this nation when morally settled, spiritually and morally, and crowns it with perfection. A year of rest for the nation and the land, a year of peace and quiet without oppressor and tyrant, of equality and rest. That's how my soul reconnects HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And while it was true yearly, every seventh year, it's absolutely true every single Shabbos that we have. Okay, good Shabbos, and happy Lag B'Omer.